You're listening to episode 8 of Beer Than Boots interview series. In this episode, we talk with community manager Trampas Whiteman. Running time for this episode is 52 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
My name's Pat.
And my name is Trampas.
Want to welcome Trampas to Fear the Boot. He's a longtime friend of the show who is joining us as a guest host. Trampas, you actually have a pretty impressive resume. You want to go ahead and rattle off some of the stuff you've been involved
in? And he can tell great World War II stories.
Yeah, indeed. I tell you, we should have a Fear the Boot bonus episode.
We need to do a Fear the Boot bonus episode of all the World War II stories we know from people we know.
Yeah, because we just sat here before we started recording. Whenever I have a guest host, I try to just kind of BS around a little bit to get everyone comfortable. And we were swapping stories about World War II and Vietnam from family members and friends and things like that. And we've got a pretty interesting collection of stories amongst us. So there's maybe some recording material in there. Anyways, Trampas, go ahead. Tell everyone a little bit about yourself.
For those who don't know me, I'm Trampas Whiteman. I go by Dragon Helm on the boards. Me and some other guys, known as the Whitestone Council, started this little fan website you might have heard of called the Dragonlance Nexus. And I should mention it's the Emmy award-winning fan site.
I wouldn't mention that on here. I'm not surprised at one. I voted for you at least 300 or 400 times.
So. You're not supposed to talk about that. Oh, let's see.
I totally can't believe you went there. That is hilarious.
Yeah, I remember your 2 or 3 points from that speech, too, by the way. But anyway, I have also been a RPG designer for Sovereign Press, which later became Margaret Weiss Productions. I was a freelancer, and I have cover credit on such books as Races of Ancelon, Knightly Orders of Ancelon, and Holy Orders of the Stars. I have also worked on the Dragonlance Legend of Huma comic book adaptation, and I was a scriptwriter for issues 3 through 6 until the series got canceled. So,
no, that sucks.
Yeah, I know.
So if you want to know anything about Dragonlance, ask somebody else. This guy has never touched it.
Yeah. Oh, my name's in the credit of the Dragonlance movie, by the way.
No way.
Is it really?
For what?
Serious. Well, I was one of the guys who helped do a little research for the movie. My name is like at the very end almost, but I did a little bit of research, and you'll notice that in the movie, Lorana is wearing elven chain, you know, like kind of like that picture from the Dungeon Master Guide, 3.5 or so. Uh-huh. And it's that way because, you know, I said, well, here's a picture of elven chain from the D&D, you know, Dungeon Master Guide.
I love how you wait until after you're on the show to drop this bomb.
Well, I hear you guys are such fans of the movie.
Yeah, you should hear our commentary.
I'll tell you this. I had a great time watching that movie.
You know, you can't really take it too terribly seriously. You know, it's what the movie is a first step. I mean, if you look at Lord of the Rings and go back, you know, think about the Ralph Bakshi Hobbit movie, you know, for example. And that definitely was not how Tolkien envisioned his world, but it was a first step, which later led to the Peter Jackson movies. Well, this, I think, is a first step. So maybe someday down the road, we can kidnap Peter Jackson and have a great set of films.
Trampas, do you know something I don't, or is that as blindly optimistic as it sounds?
That's blindly optimistic. I don't know anything anymore. They don't talk to me.
Yeah. So do you think that, are they going to make another Dragonlance movie, Dragonlance cartoon? You know, give us the dirt. Give us the dish here.
There has been some talk that there will be a sequel, Dragons of Winter Night. And they have listened to a lot of the fan feedback on what went right, such as the soundtrack, and what didn't go right.
Such as not the soundtrack.
No comment. And, you know, they're going to make some improvements next time. Certainly the 2D, 3D thing didn't work out quite as well as they'd wanted. You know, I've seen and other forms of media where it has worked out. I think the Iron Man cartoon, if I'm remembering right, that was excellent. But this didn't quite work as well. So I don't know if they're going that route in the future or not.
When we were setting this show up, There's a part of me, I wasn't sure whether to make this an episode or an interview. Trampas, he's coming on the show to talk about something that in the 3 years of Fear of the Boot, instantly we're actually just a little bit out from our 3 year anniversary, but he's here to talk about something that in all our 3 years, we have never talked about because of our umpteen hosts. None of them have been experts in this or even...
Or anything.
Even armchair experts in this, okay? Not even like self-appointed experts. This is something completely foreign to all of us, but it's a major part of role-playing culture that we ought to talk about.
Girls?
Oh. Dude, that's
Chris
funny.
Is a host.
Yeah.
Girls.
So
I've heard of those.
And that topic is the fan side of role-playing. All right, it's the nature of role players generally.
Well, why would we talk about fans? Because
we hate it all.
Well, we are fans. I mean,
well, but here's the thing. All right, we may be fans, but there is this whole aspect of role playing culture, and I guess geek culture in general, which is fandom.
Yeah. I hate that word, by the way, I agree with it.
I do too. Yeah. I can't say the word, it's a silly word, but nonetheless, it describes a real concept, which is that there is an entire industry set up around people that are fans of a particular intellectual property.
Right.
For example, in the case of Trampas, obviously it's Forgotten Realms.
Yeah.
Right.
And
Greyhawk.
But you know, these are people who love these products so much that they're gonna go out there and they're gonna create podcasts or they're gonna create websites or they're gonna create whatever.
Yeah. That are, and here's another word that I hate, fanish.
Right. And there's gonna be kind of
I have heard that word seriously used by quote unquote experts at panels, at conventions about this. And it just, I don't know why. I suppose it's a real word. Fandom, fanish,
yeah, fansexual.
You know, you are allowed to take off your boots that people fear and throw them.
I might do that.
You know, right, it'll be a George Bush moment. So,
But these people are an important part of the RPG culture because there's kind of a push back and forth where these guys get out there and by talking so much about a particular IP oftentimes can shape where it's headed and where it's going. And even if that's not the case, these are still people that love the stuff so much they're willing to do things that invest themselves back in it. So Trampas, I am glad to have you here.
Thank you.
To kind of give us some information, a little look into this whole world of fan efforts. So you take it away. We will happily heckle you the whole way through.
Oh, I know it. I know it.
We are relying upon you to guide us through this vast and thick jungle.
Oh, dear God. Well, okay. So, you know, you might say to yourself, why build a fan site to begin with? You know, there's a lot of reasons, and I'll kind of give you a glimpse of what I went through when I was going through this. Back in the day, back in the fall of, it was December of 2000, there was this announcement from Wizards of the Coast that Dragonlance Gaming would no longer be produced. Prior to that, it had been produced under the Saga rule system, which was the card-based game, and there was this horrible divide in Dragonlance fandom between the quote-unquote 4th Age fans who played AD&D and these 5th Age fans who played Saga. Now, D&D 3rd Edition had just come out, and there was this movement to try to produce something for that. What was happening at the time, and I was new and had no clue what was really going on, was there's a lot of people saying, we should really do something. We should really do something, because there's nothing official coming down. I said, well, why don't we do something, you know? And I did something. I gathered together a bunch of people, and I went blindly into it, and I didn't know the pitfalls and didn't know exactly what I was doing, but we worked through them. And in January 2001, several things happened. Tracy Hickman proposed his Dragonlance Nexus idea, which were
his?
No, proposes. Not proposed his.
No.
Proposes.
Ah.
Well, Tracy comes up with the original Nexus outline.
You thought
outline.
Tracy was a guy. Everybody screws that up.
Oh, yes. Yes. Here's another secret for you. Jamie Chambers of Sovereign Press, also a guy.
What? I don't even know who that is, but I'm horribly disappointed.
Yeah, I know. I know. I was too.
Lucy Lawless? I'm going to shock you on this one, too.
Oh, man. Oh,
wow.
Man. You know, I had no clue until the Star Spangled Banner. But anyway.
I know what you're talking about.
But Tracy Hickman proposes the Dragonlance Nexus idea. And between that and my original Whitestone Council idea, we all just sort of came together. And our webmaster at the time was Matt Haig, who's the guy behind the old Dragonlance.com site. And we all just sort of came together and formed this site with the idea of producing rules for Dragonlance 3rd Edition. Long story short, a year later, Sovereign Press contacts us and says, hey, we got the license to do Dragonlance gaming. Want to help us out? We were like, let me think about that. Yes. So,
smart move on their part. Many gaming companies have a very bad habit of ignoring, if not outright alienating, their most dedicated fans.
Yeah.
So smart move on their part by reaching out to you guys.
Well, and as it turns out, so many of us deeply love the setting, and we found within ourselves a lot of talent. Cam Banks, for example, has become a Dragonlance author. Sean McDonald has become a cartographer who's worked for Margaret Weiss Productions, Green Ronin, amongst others. So a lot of good has come out of this whole movement. You know, the other thing that happened at the time, too, and we got kind of lucky with this, was Jim Butler, who was then of Wizards of the Coast, was setting up all these official fan sites. And so the Nexus got to be the official Dragonlance fan site. And I attribute a lot of our success to, you know, right place, right time, and a lot of luck. But back to the original point, you know, why does a person build a fan site? Well, first thing I thought of that is something near and dear to my heart, which is to support a campaign setting that you love, whether it's in print or not. You know, for example, look at Beyond the Moons at spelljammer.org. They support Spelljammer even though it's no longer in print and hasn't been for a while and has only had one polyhedron article on that since.
It was a close call, but we're all cool.
Yeah.
Oh boy, yeah. If you guys didn't know, I'm a Spelljammer fan.
I'm so sorry. What happened?
Well, it was created by Jeff Grubb.
Spelljammer.
There's Tinker Gnomes.
It could have been created by Gandhi. It's Spelljammer. Tinker Gnomes, giant hamsters, hippos with guns.
Yes.
Oh. You know, Travis, that's going to be one of my questions that I got for you.
Sure.
Is
why? Why, God, why? That's my question for you.
No, I could answer that. It's just a reminder that there's an angry God punishing a sinful world. My question, the question that I have for you is actually, you were talking about the success you had with the Dragonlance Nexus. And of course, you guys also went on to do the Dragonlance Canticle, which was, I believe, the supporting podcast.
Right.
And my question that I have is, do you think if somebody's looking to start a fan site today, they can hope to recreate that kind of success? And if so, how? Now, I know you said a lot of it's luck, but there's got to be some method to the madness here.
Get a time machine, travel back to 1998.
Well, is that part of it? Should you look for the upcoming IPs now?
Yeah.
If you really want, if this is your thing, that you're trying to really get involved with something you can affect,
that's a good point right there, is look for the intellectual properties that are just starting up. You know, that's a great way to get a fan site started.
But I don't think that's how fan sites start. I don't think that somebody sits there and goes, well, I wonder what the next big thing. I think somebody sits there and goes,
absolutely,
I'm a really big fan of X.
Absolutely.
And I'm going to push X.
Opportunism is probably not the best place to drive an effort of love, because most labors of love don't lead much of anywhere. And
I'm
typically take a lot of time and money to do.
I'm a really, really, really big, huge, gigantic Doctor Who fan. Huge.
You ain't going to get noticed in that field.
Exactly. I could make the biggest site in the world, and it's
you're
a drop in the bucket
in that field. But if it just so happens that you're a fan of something that's relatively new or relatively small and niche, Trampas, do you think that helps your chances of getting noticed or really becoming a resource for other fans?
It can, yes. Like, if you're the only person putting out something for a particular setting, you're going to get noticed. If you look at, for example, the Dark Sun websites out there, There aren't that many. There's Athos.org, and I forget the name of the other one that's been around. And then there's a few minor ones. So if you go for something that's a little more niche, that's going to help your chances. If you're going for something big, like the Forgotten Realms, you don't have much of a chance in the world if you're looking to become the biggest thing. I also think, too, it kind of depends upon the nature of your site. For example, are you a all-round site that covers everything in the world? Well, that's been part of the success of the Nexus. But what if you specialize in something? For example, you just have a podcast about the setting, or, you know, you're...
Like, basically, you're saying break into the new areas of the web on old content, like, say, starting a wiki or doing a podcast. You know, people have done Dragonlance for years, especially you guys have kind of cornered the market there, but maybe you could break into it with something that isn't necessarily done very much, like podcasting.
Well, right, exactly. One of the sites, and it's no longer operational, you know, it's still on the web, but it's not being maintained, is Dragonlance Underground. And their niche was to do kind of that, you know, to do humor where they were kind of poking fun at not only Dragonlance, but Dragonlance fans. Well, that's something we couldn't really tackle with the Nexus because we're very careful about, you know, respecting Wizards of the Coast. But, you know, sometimes, too, a lot of this is luck. Right place, right time. That's exactly what happened to me. If I had tried doing the same thing, you know, last year, nothing would have happened. Or if it did, it wouldn't have been on this level.
So you're basically saying it's the Penny Arcade advice when they ask, how do you start a successful webcomic? And their answer is start a webcomic in 1998.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, the other thing, too, is it's got to be something that you really love and want to dedicate a lot of time to. I don't know how many times I've been up to 1 a.m. or after working on the Nexus, you know, talking with people, coordinating with people, you know, working with fandom. And that was, good Lord, that was an obstacle I had, was the fandom at the time was just on this mailing list, and it was very negative. And there's a news group as well, which is even worse. And, you know, people just tearing each other apart, and I kind of had to rally them together and say, you know, look, we are here to support all of Dragonlance, period. 4th Age, 5th Age, none of that matters anymore. Let's just be Dragonlance fans.
Yeah, and that's an awesome way to go about it, too. You know, that's almost kind of what you have to
do. Well, there's a simple fact of human nature that we actually tend to bitch about the things we love as much as we bitch about the things we hate.
Oh, yeah. I called that on you with Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it, and I won't.
Yeah, Dan was doing an absolute rant, pounding his fist, and Dan doesn't usually get like that. And he's talking about this about Battlestar, and this, and they're messing this up, and they're telling the story wrong, and I hate how they're doing these characters. And I looked at him, I'm like, you really love this show, don't you? And he's like, well, yes, I do. I'm like, yeah, because if you didn't love it, you wouldn't care.
Yeah, I was, still am, but yeah, particularly back in the day, was a really big Battletech fan, and I probably spent more time bitching about Battletech than I did every other game I disliked combined.
Yeah, so that, but I see how that like really works in your favor, though, Tramp, is even though I'm sure at the time it was really hard work.
Oh,
yeah.
Find a way to direct that energy.
Yeah, exactly. You have people who are on fire about Dragonlance. They're angry. They want to be heard. But, you know, if they didn't like Dragonlance, they just unsubscribe from the newsletter. They just walk away and sell their books or let them collect dust. So you're telling me you were actually able to, like, kind of mobilize these people and get behind this community?
Well, what I had to do was kind of work to where I said all points of view are valid. You know, that was one of our key phrases at the time. And I opened up the Nexus and I said, look, if you don't like so-and-so's rules on the Wizards of High Sorcery, then write your own. Present different points of view. And when we were working towards making that official rule set, you know, we said, look, you know, we're going to look at all of this and then we'll pick one to be official. But if you don't like it, use something else. It's all cool.
Yeah.
And I think that was something that was kind of missing from the time. And, you know, I can't take sole credit for this because we had a lot of good volunteers with the Whitestone Council. And, you know, that made the site what it is today. But mm-hmm. we had to change the tone. And to give you an idea of how the tone has changed, back in the day, there was one Dragonlance author, and I forget which one it was at the time, who actually got a death threat. And he had to call the police.
Damn it, I have never gotten a death threat yet. I have had a couple of people threaten to beat me up, but I have yet to get a death threat.
Well, you're doing it wrong then.
Apparently I am. Here I thought I was being a caustic jerk, but obviously I'm not laying it on. Trampus Spelljammer really sucks. It's terrible.
Bam. Yeah. Well, you know, one of the compliments I've gotten from Margaret has been in terms of the community. You know, she talks about how mm-hmm. this group of moderators that have been assembled have really done a lot to keep the community friendly, how authors feel welcome to come there and share their ideas and to talk with fans. And, you know, that's great for the authors. That's great for Wizards of the Coast. It's great for the intellectual property, and it's great for fandom.
Yeah. So with the Dragonlance Canticle, how much would you say, I guess you can't give numbers or percentages, but how much of it is a community driven effort where it's like the fans are deeply involved in forums and community and then contributing to it? And how much is it you and your team are just creating information and stuff and presenting it to people and people just consume it?
Well, I hate to nitpick, but I actually rephrase your question a little bit.
Oh, fine.
Because they're all fans just contributing out of love.
That's true.
I guess the thing,
how much is the larger community?
I would rephrase it a little bit. See, how much is that?
How much of it is the Whitestone Council and the Nexus staff, and how much is the community at large, right?
Right, exactly.
Right.
Okay. Gosh, that's hard to say. It might be 50-50. I don't know the percentages. Mm-hmm. I never thought about that before, but we have a group of staff that produces ongoing content. We've got several guys who work on a lexicon. We have a guy who runs our newspaper. We have a newspaper. It's the Ancelonian Herald, for example. We've got a guy who set up the weather.
Does it have moving pictures like a Harry Potter newspaper?
Not yet. All tech space for now. But at the same time, we put out the call to fans, and we actively seek fan submissions. So, you know, someone puts on our forum something about, hey, I got this great new rule for, you know, alternate rules for running Dragonlance and Pathfinder. We say, hey, why don't you submit that to us? You know, can we post that on mm-hmm. our site? And, you know, it doesn't hurt, too, that we're kind of like the Borg and absorb all these other little sites that have gone away over the time.
Nice. Well, do you do that a lot? Do you find, like, Dragonlance fan sites that have been basically orphaned and kind of absorbed their material? Or what do you mean by
well,
that?
Well, we have an archives section, and this is kind of a section of sites that have been run in the past and are no longer maintained or no longer even on the web. And one of my favorite ones, this contributor named James O'Rance came up with this huge site on Talados, which is the other continent in Dragonlance. And so we've got all that information on our site now, and now people can continue to enjoy Talados, and it gets more traffic now because it's tied to our website.
Have you had any problems with that? And what I mean is people crabbing to you where they're like, well, that was so-and-so site, or that was my site, and, you know, you can't use it. You can't take that away. That's my site. Even though, of course, they're using someone else's IP to begin with.
Well, we always gain permission first. You know, I never mm-hmm. post a site without getting permission. Part of the problem when you run one of the larger sites like I do is that you do get a fair amount of criticism, whether warranted or not. And, sure. I mean, we've been compared to the Borg several times. And I can't say it's not true, you know, but from my point of view, it's a matter of, look, you know, we just want this information to stick around, you know, because right. there's good ideas from a lot of people. You know, we don't want to disappear. We don't want you to miss mm-hmm. out on the gems that have been out there.
Right.
Let's talk about that bigger issue there of copyright. I mean, you're building an entire site here based off of someone else's intellectual property. And so even when you're not borrowing content from other fan sites, from whom you obviously have permission, you may be building off of ideas that belong to a larger company. What are the copyright issues here?
Okay, the key thing you have to do is
to put up a notice about who owns the copyright, link back to their site, and then make a note that your site is an unofficial site or fan site or whatever. For example, our website says the Dragonlance Nexus, unofficial Dragonlance content, news, articles, artwork, and more by the fans for the fans. And then it says that Dragonlance, Dungeons & Dragons, D&D and their logos, Wizards of the Coast, and the Wizards of the Coast logo are copyright 2009 Wizards of the Coast, subsidiary of Hasbro. You know, so basically we say, hey, you know, look, this belongs to someone else. We're not the official guys here. The other key thing is, do not try to make a buck off of someone else's property. That is the quickest way to get a cease and desist order. I will cite a perfect example, Emma's Character Sheets. They were a great fan resource for a while, and I'm not going to go into, you know, too much on this because it's become a big debate on the web, but...
Oh, go ahead and go into it.
Okay.
I wasn't really following it, so...
At least explain what the issue was.
Give some context.
Emma created... You know, he had all these wonderful-looking sheets that used the logos of various, you know, Wizards of the Coast properties, you know, such as the D&D logo, for example. They all looked nice and well and good, far better even than what WotC put out. They'd never paid much attention to the site, but at some point... Emma started creating this character manager thing. You paid him money, and yes, Emma's also a guy, by the way.
You Tramp! Why do you crush my dreams, Trampus? Why?
He's also a talking hippo.
Yes! I mean, no! I'm so conflicted.
Emma's actually short for Emmanuel, for those who aren't in the know. He lives in Italy. But anyway, he creates his character manager. And so you pay him the subscription. And based on which subscription you pay for, you can manage, you know, X number of characters on his site. So that way, anywhere you go, you can log on to his site and get your character and print it out. And you'll always have it with you.
Can't I do that with, like, Gmail or something for free? Why would someone pay for that?
Well, because...
Or Google Docs. Or,
because his character sheets, once you got up to the subscription level, did a lot of cool things like auto-calculating.
Oh, they were, like, interactive and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, there's a bit more to them, you know? So you put in your ability scores, and half the things filled out, so...
Why didn't Wizards of the Coast buy this guy's site and integrate it into Gleemax?
Good question, and now you're getting into the controversy. Yeah,
well, and that's the thing. The Wizards of the Coast had already spent a lot of time and money with their own character builder. And so they're looking at this, you know, at Emma and saying, well, here's a guy who's competing with us, who has a fair following, and he's, you know, using our logo and intellectual property really to kind of do it.
See, Wizards of the Coast doesn't understand IT. Money talks, BS walks, you have a BS product, get rid of it, buy the other guys, integrate it into your site, profit. You know,
well, I agree.
Where's the disconnect? Yeah, I mean, I don't want to argue with you about it, but we all agree.
The bigger point here is, under copyright law, there's this whole idea of fair use, which is fairly complex, and we're not positioned to dispense legal advice. The advice I'll give here is the same advice I give every time we talk about this. Copyright.gov has a great lay-level FAQ that will dispel all the myths and all the pseudo-lawyer advice you get on the web.
Right.
But the big point we're getting at here is, if you want to build a fan site, don't start charging for anything, because the minute you start trying to cash in on something that fundamentally belongs to somebody else, you are headed down a road of legal troubles.
Right. So whether it's right, wrong, or indifferent,
you can debate the morality of it till you're blue in the face. Not the point here. The point is that if you're going to do this kind of fan site thing, do not start charging for things that are related to somebody else's intellectual property. Mm-hmm. It won't end anywhere good.
The thing I'll add to that, too, is respect the copyright holder. I don't always agree with Wizards of the Coast, but I respect them because I know that they hold the copyright to Dragonlance. The day I use their intellectual property to bash them or something is the day I get the cease and desist.
Yeah. Have you ever felt yourself walking that fine line between laying out some, in your opinion, just criticism to maybe against Wizards of the Coast to maybe saying, well, you know, maybe I shouldn't say that because it'll have larger consequences, and you have to you end up having to play a political game. Do you encounter that a lot?
Oh yeah, a fair amount. Mm-hmm. I've been gifted with a fair sense of diplomacy, which has helped tremendously. Mm-hmm. So
I have not. Enjoy it.
No, he hasn't.
What helps me out a lot is I can phrase things in a way that might be, instead of a criticism, it's a suggestion, and mm-hmm. that might help. Or when in doubt, shut up. I also will say this also helps to solve any marital problems.
Excellent.
You just want to show that level of respect. I don't always agree with Wizards of the Coast. There are times they do things I say, why the heck do they do that? But I'm not going to go out on the web and bash them. And mm-hmm. especially when you got a funny name like mine that's tied enough to Dragonlance, you know, it's pretty easy to get noticed. So,
right.
You know, I play cool. And we're all good.
Trampus is an odd name. Where does Trampus come from?
Okay, that comes from a Western called the Virginian. Trampus was one of the characters on there. The Virginian was unique in that it was a 90-minute show, something you don't see anymore. And my mom liked the character Trampus, and so that's why I got named.
And if you write it backwards, it's Sapmark.
Thank you. Oh, God. You had to go there.
Parents were huge arborists, and it's just been all downhill from there.
Don't feel bad, Trampus. My mom named me after Chad Everett. He was a soap opera star, so.
Well, you know, it's a wonder I made it through junior high and high school without going to therapy. there's so many ways that you can butcher my name, and most of which.
And believe me, we were butchering it before you got on. So.
Oh, well, thank you.
But going back to what you were saying, I think there's certainly an underlying point here, which is that if you get out there to start a fan effort, you kind of have to understand what you're getting into it for. That if you see yourself as an advocate for the true believer squaring off against the company, you may very well be a valuable voice in the community, but the simple fact of the matter is there's going to be this glass ceiling of you're only going to get so far because the company that creates the product may be forced to respond to you in some ways at some times, but is generally going to resent your existence. But if you come into this with the idea that you are going to be something of a super fan, that you are going to be someone who serves as a bridge between the general community and the company that creates the product, or you're at least going to be someone who's going to help build community out of this diaspora of fans with the idea that at some point you might be interacting with the company that makes it once they take you seriously, you have to have a very, very different tact in how you do this. You can't come into this with guns blazing, trying to prove that you're all that and get across the point that you think no one else has the balls to say.
And from the company's standpoint, you know, they're going to look at you and say, okay, is this fan site, you know, helping our intellectual property and our sales, or is it hindering it?
It's just rabble-rousing.
Yeah.
Pat, you've been awfully quiet. What do you have to say? Are you a Spelljammer fan? Do you like Dragonlance? How do you really feel about Trampus's name? In what funny way do you have to say it?
That's great. Trampus, let me ask you something else. Let's say that...
poor Pat.
Let's talk about some resources for building these fan sites, or even if it's not a fan site, for building your newsletter or whatever. If you want to set off on this, what's some stuff you can use?
Well, just some basic web tools, you know. First of all, find somebody to be a webmaster, and some basic HTML knowledge will take you far. A lot of what I do is just based off of simple HTML. You know, you want to involve people in the community. Don't forget that the people out there in the community are a valuable resource. You may not be able to write a complete netbook for whatever setting, but get some other people involved. Let them help out. And you'll be amazed at the talent out there.
Will you also be disappointed by some of the talent out there?
Well,
here's that diplomacy check coming in.
wait a minute. I think someone's calling me. That's the problem is, like the old phrase goes, the great thing about the internet is anybody can write for the internet. The bad thing for the internet is that anybody can write for the internet.
Yeah.
You know, there has been some amazing talent. For example, Cam Banks became a member of Margaret Weiss Productions and an author. But I've seen some people, too, who will write some stuff, and you know, their stuff just is not that good, truth be told. Mm-hmm. One of the ways we have of dealing with that is we have a little rating system on our site. So, you know, we can have the fans chime in on whether they like something or not. And you get enough people doing that, you can get a pretty fair idea on whether you're looking at something that's quality or something that's just junk.
Mm-hmm. So I actually do have a question for you.
Oh, my God.
Hey, I know.
He just woke up.
Where are you?
Where are we? What day is this? Anyway.
Where'd this tattoo come from?
Yeah.
I feel funny.
What is in this Mountain Dew? So how many people do you have that work on the site with you? Or is it just, I mean, is the site just maintained by you?
Oh, good Lord. I will guess around, well, last count we had about 20 people. But granted, they're all working in different functions. For example, I've got two guys who are currently working as kind of our web administrators. I've got about half a dozen people who work as moderators on the forums. I've got some resident rules designers. And there's all these different roles that everybody plays, you know. So you don't have to be Mr. Game Designer to take part in something. You know, you might be good in some other area and still find a home. And, you know, one of the things I stressed, too, about working on the fan side, I insisted from day one that we were going to act professionally. Not that there'd be, like, a business and you had to clock in or anything like that, but that, you know, we'd come to this and we'd build a hierarchy. We would treat each other with respect. And, you know, if you couldn't do that, then I'm sorry, you couldn't play.
You want something definitely a little bit more than a Angel Fire page or a MySpace page. You want something right. That, you know, could last and was meaningful. And you know what? I think you definitely accomplished that.
Well, there's
you
also your people did. The levels of drama you could create, because one of the difficulties about building any kind of a volunteer effort, maybe this could be a fan site or anything, is you get people that are coming into this. And if you're not careful, there's no clear power structure. People are very emotionally invested in this because they care enough to do it for free. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to get a lot of conflicting opinions, possibly a lot of hurt feelings, a lot of drama. And this is the kind of thing that you have to be ready for from the outset.
And that was something I was not ready for from the outset. I went into this blind, no idea of the history of this community from before when I got there. No idea of the drama. No idea that all these people would, you know, react so passionately about everything. And it took us like a year to finally get things down. And do your homework, you know, learn about the community. You know, you just don't want to go into this blind. But people are very passionate, which is another reason why I insisted on kind of that professional behavior, was so that we could work together towards a common goal. The one thing I discovered, and this was a lesson hard learned, is that you do not design by committee. That doesn't work. You know, you get, say, 20, 100 people together trying to figure out your Night of Salamnia rules. Well, you're going to get 20 or 100 different opinions on how it should go. Now, having them as an advisory board is fine, but in the end, you've got to have people who make decisions on how things go.
What about site art? As we're sitting here talking about resources you can use, if I want to start up my fan site about whatever, Battlestar Galactica, let's say, I may or may not be able to get away with going out there and grabbing screen caps from the show or grabbing official art from Sci-Fi's homepage and smearing that all over my site. How do you guys put art on your site? Where do you get it from? How do you license it?
Our art comes from the fans, first and foremost. And we've been very lucky to have a number of people over the years who have contributed. You know, that helps you on the copyright issues right there. Now, some artists are very good about allowing you to post their artwork on your site, give a link back to their site, give credit where due, of course. Larry Elmore, for example, is fairly good about that. You can gather from sources like that. But my advice is try to get the fans involved, you know, and that's something that can be fun because there's a lot of young, promising artists out there. And again, this is one of these things that you're going to get varying degrees. Also, be aware that you're going to get a lot of anime versions of whatever setting.
Yep.
Depending upon your opinion of anime, you know.
Do you get a lot of the other end of the dark side of fandom community? Do you get a lot of, like, porny type stuff?
You know, I've not seen a lot, but I know there is some out there, and we avoid it like the plague. You know, maybe Dragonlance Underground might take that up, but not so much us, you know?
Yeah. Dragonlance After Dark.
Well, you know, that's one of the other big things, too, is I work very hard to keep this kind of family friendly, you know, to keep it in that PG, maybe up to PG-13 range. But, you know, the day you take someone's intellectual property and start going into nudity, slasher stuff, hentai, or what have you, you know, that's, again, that's when you're going to get shut down.
You know, LiveJournal went through that, I think, about a year ago. LiveJournal has a huge fanfic community, and that's what a lot of their fanfic is about, is about like the porny aspect and stuff, and they got a lot of takedown notices, and they took down a lot of stuff voluntarily because it was a lot of, like, not just porn, right? We're talking bad porn,
right?
You know, and
it, I highly advise against any sort of fan fiction on your site. Sometimes the person who holds the intellectual property is good with that. In our case, Wizards of the Coast requested we not have any, and we took every bit of fan fiction we had down.
Why is that? Did they give you a reason?
And were people pissed about that?
Oh, yeah, there were some, and, you know, people will tell you too, again, varying degrees of what's out there. Part of it is that competing thing, again, you know, part of it is a legal thing. And I'll send you guys a link to a site I have that explains it in full detail. But basically, the idea is that if I create a story for Dragonlance, and if Wizards of the Coast produces a Dragonlance story that just happened, you know, by coincidence to have similar themes and ideas to my story, I can sue you. And that's what they're kind of avoiding, is that lawsuit thing. You know, they don't want every Joe Schmo out there who wrote fan fiction to sue them. Now, why this applies to fan fiction and not fan art, I don't know. But that's kind of where things are at this time.
For them, it might be a marketing question, or, you know, they might be choosing to look the other way. I know that, like, a lot of anime, they have fan subbers who translate over into English or whatever language and take the anime over to the country like the U.S. before it gets officially released in the U.S. And that's illegal. That violates copyright. And the anime companies, for the most part, choose to look the other way. They very specifically look the other way, as long as the fan subbers, when it does get released in that country like America, take it down. They're like, they put it up for consumption and then they take it down because the anime companies see it as marketing, free marketing for a product. They kind of test the waters. Do we want to release in the U.S.? Don't we? This fan sub was outrageously popular. Well, then yes, we do want to release in the U.S.
And therein lies a simple word of advice to anyone from a game company that's listening right now. I understand you have to protect your intellectual property.
Oh, you totally have
to. And I understand. Yeah. You have to protect your profit margin because you're in this to make money. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's not a real popular fact with a lot of people, but it's the simple reality and there's nothing wrong with it. But for heaven's sake, when you have people out there putting that much energy into your intellectual property, that's a compliment.
Yeah.
And these are people that
harness
are probably
that energy and focus.
Yeah. These are probably the people that are working the hardest to get other people excited about your product. Don't beat these people down. Even when they screw up, find some way to redirect that energy.
Back in the day when TSR was, you know, towards its final days and the internet was very new and everything, they used to go after fan sites, and that caused a lot of resentment, and people to this day remember that.
Yeah, and that's absolutely stupid. Pissing off the people that are at the core of your evangelists is a really dumb idea. And so be very careful about how you pursue these things, realizing that you are not, I don't care what company you are not so entrenched in the market that you can afford to make the core of your fans mad. and expect to still be doing as well 5 years from now? Terampus, how do you get started? Let's say I just want to set out. I've got my basic resources. And what I mean by this is not like we'll go out and buy a domain. But what I mean is, like, I think a lot of people, when they try to get involved in something like this, get too ambitious.
Oh, yes.
They don't figure out where they want to start. What do you recommend doing about this? Should you pick a particular area to start on? Should you work out a path for growth? Should you have a central theme? I mean, what's your advice here?
Start with a mission statement. Figure out what it is that you want to do. You know, whether it's create the ultimate audio experience through a podcast, or create gaming rules, or to be a fan art site, or what have you. Figure out what it is that you want to do. Organize it. Get people involved who have knowledge about the types of things that you want to do. If you have a fan art site, well, you don't need an RPG designer. And then have somebody who is fairly proficient with being a webmaster. And there are any number of people out there these days who are. You are going to have to think about domain names and hosting and all that. This may cost you some money. I'll tell you that up front. I spend a certain amount of money every month to keep the Nexus, the forums, the podcast, to keep all of that going. So, you know, be aware that you need to have that financial resource. We've been very lucky in the past that, you know, we're set up as an Amazon associate. So that way, when people come to look at the books in our product section, they can click and buy it off of Amazon, and then we get a little bit of a kickback from that, and then that helps to pay for the bills. Look at what's free out there to use. If you're doing a podcast, there's Audacity. If you want to do a website and have a newsletter, well, you know, Yahoo is set up to where you can set up a Yahoo group, and people can join through your site, and then you can send out a newsletter to all those people.
Right. And while it might not be right for everything, if you're looking for a general backbone for a website, WordPress is perfectly free. And it has so many plugins that do so many different things that a lot of stuff you're going to find you can cover with WordPress. Not everything. But you know what? This comes in if you've got someone, you've got access to someone who's a PHP developer, they can extend it for other things. If that's not a possibility, then you know what? You probably need to start somewhere else with .NET Nuke or whatever and go from there.
Yeah, computer knowledge is a must. Somebody in your organization must have it. I have a basic knowledge, but I rely on others to be the webmaster. Now, generally, a lot of these sites, the webmaster is kind of the head of the organization. That just didn't turn out that way with the Nexus. I was kind of co-administering it with Matt Haig for several years, and then he said he wanted to step back a bit and kind of turned it over to me. So it became this weird thing where, you know, I was kind of in charge, but at the same time, I have two guys who work on maintaining the site and making the changes that we need to make. You know, if you create a fan site, it may not necessarily be for a campaign setting. For example, I mentioned the Saga rule system earlier. It's generally forgotten. Let's say you love that system and you want to keep awareness of that system available. That's another reason to create one. What about a setting that you might see like on TV that has no RPG side to it? For example, Heroes. If you're a big Heroes fan, well, there's no RPG for it. So, you know, you might create a Heroes website using the Mutants and Masterminds rules or whatever, and, you know, have that resource available. You can translate some games from one system to another. Now, be careful here. Make certain, you know, this is something that the company isn't going to hate. But, you know, I've seen out there where people have created documents that would translate, oh, let's pick any random setting, Shadowrun, to...
No!
I'm poking all the buttons.
Shadowrun to Spelljammer, for example. Yeah,
Shadowjammer. Oh, man.
I quit. I'm out.
No, but, you know, I've seen D20 versions of Shadowrun using the D20 modern rules, for example. Another beautiful thing about fandom, let's say you have a game setting that isn't covering all the options that you want to cover. For example, back in the second edition days of Dragonlance, there was an option to become a cleric of one of the gods of arcane magic in Dragonlance. Well, in third edition, that was removed. You know, they basically said, look, they're gods of arcane magic. Why would they need clerics? They've got wizards following them. So, say you wanted to have that option, though, still, even though it's not official. You could write that up as a prestige class, paragon path, or however you want to do it. Post it up on the web, and then other people who want to play that same sort of role can say, ah, look, there it is. You know, I can go ahead with this. But, you know, basically, I'll say that it is a lot of work, and it's a labor of love. But if it's something that you're willing to put the time and effort into, and if you can get the people behind you, you can have a lot of fun.
So was it worth it? Was Dragonlance Exodus all the work you've done, all the work you've done with all these other people, was it all worth it?
Oh, hell yes. Yes, and yes. It very much worth it. It changed my life. It showed me that I'm capable of so much more than I ever thought I was. It allowed me to become friends with authors, to write and be in print, to hobnob with authors, to, you know, learn about my capabilities, to gain new friends. And there's so many great rewards that come from it. Now, again, my circumstances are probably far from the traditional experience, but there's a lot of rewards that any fan site can offer a person.
Awesome. That's fantastic.
Well, Trampas, I want to thank you for joining us. This has been...
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's been really interesting. Mm-hmm. Like I said before, it's a side of things we've never really talked about on this show.
I think Pat fell asleep, but that's because he's not. Sure.
I tend to bore
Pat. I was taking it all in.
As for the rest of you guys, thank you for tuning in, and we will catch you on the next show.
See ya.
Later.
Later days.
This interview has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2009. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com.